When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.
What's up with your calendar?
I replace all the days of the week with sandwiches.
Because?
Because at Subway restaurants, every day, there's a different sub of the day.
Fair enough.
Yeah, each day I can choose a different 6-inch sub for just $3.50, or get it as a foot-long sub for $6.
So why is today circled in red?
Oh, today's my anniversary.
Maybe you should.
Yeah, I gotta go.
Subway, fresh is what we do. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Additional charge for extras and deluxe, plus tax replicable. Sandwiches prepared in front of you.
Blog Talk Radio.
Je vous écoute. Live, several miles from Hollywood. It's Advice Goddess Radio. With nationally syndicated advice columnist Amy Alcorn. You tell me.
Welcome to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Alcon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. I'm science-based advice columnist and author Amy Alcon, also known as the Advice Goddess.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Vertelin, the animal behaviorist and author, also known as Dr. Jungle Jen, as Amy likes to call me.
Yes, I love her cute southern accent. This is our every other week show with Science News You Can Use. And I'll just let Jen kick off our show on friendship tonight with her mention of how anthropologists, we were talking about this before, anthropologists like to come up with fancy names for things.
Yeah, actually a pretty famous one named Marshall Solins, who studied the effect that culture has on people's perceptions and their actions. He came up with this term called mutuality of being. And in its simplest definition, mutuality of being means that you're participating in one another's existence. And, you know, when I think of my friends that I've had for many years, I realize that really they are all witnesses to my experiences. They know my story and I know theirs. And to that extent, we really are participants in each other's existence. But, you know, when you think about friends, participant isn't such a cuddly word. So as I started thinking about the nature of our friendships, I wondered why we have friends, how we make friends, why some people get rejected as friends, and how sometimes friendships can fizzle out or even end in a bang.
Now, these are all the things we'll discuss tonight. It's our science-based exploration of friendships and how you can improve the kind of friend you are and the kind of friendships you have. But first, to put friendship in context, people place so much importance on finding the perfect romantic partner. And of course, this is important, but they use language like, I don't want to die alone. And the thing is, romance can be tempestuous, and some friendships, like Lennon-McCartney, for example, they can be tempestuous too. But when you have special someones in your life that you aren't looking to have sex with, these can be these very wonderful and rewarding lifelong relationships that just don't have the, you know, they aren't fraught with danger and breakup the way relationships are. And actually, sometimes these can be more rewarding than romantic relationships, at least for some people. And Dr. Jen, I suspect there are some of those wonderful friendships in the animal kingdom.
Oh, there are. And in fact, one 20-year friendship between two chimpanzees, Jason and Nikita, that are at the Lucknow Zoo in India, their friendship has been making the news recently because the zoo is planning to separate them, basically because they haven't had sex. They've just been the best of friends. And, of course, if you've ever experienced a forced separation from your best friend, like maybe, you know, a lot of us might remember that when we were teenagers and we had to move, then you can sort of imagine the devastation that both of these chimps will experience, especially for Jason, who's going to be the one left behind and alone. And, you know, just as we grieve and mourn when we lose a beloved friend, animals do too, which, of course, implies that they experience the same deep bonds of friendship that we do.
That is really terrible and sad. I mean, it's just sort of like they're supposed to do their duty. And I'm reminded, you know, so you said that they've had a 20-year friendship. So this implies they've grown up together. Is that the case?
Yes. I mean, they have. They've been basically together for their whole lives. And there actually is kind of a movement to try and get the zoo to halt this move or move them together or maybe bring in another male for Nikita since, you know, they don't fancy each other that way. They're just great friends. It is pretty sad, actually.
But this makes sense, actually. There's an adaptation that seems to be against incest where I think they looked at people, yes, they did on kibbutzim. So these people who grew up together, they're just not interested in each other. And I think that's maybe because you grew up with your sister. You're not supposed to be into your sister.
Maybe that's what happened. Yeah, that might be. It's possible.
So I want to tell you, there's some pretty interesting research in humans that points to the importance of these deep friendship bonds for actually living happily ever after, which we think is the relationship's job alone. So Dr. Bella DiPaolo, whom I've had on the show, she, in her book Singled Out, points to research by Pearl Dystra that found that the least lonely group of people in 65 to 75-year-olds were women who had always been single, as in unmarried, like maybe they had boyfriends. They weren't nuns or anything. And then there's another example of this. Barbara Simon, professor of social work, interviewed 50 older, always single women. One was socially isolated, but the other 49 of these 50 older women talked about friends they were in contact with every day. And 16 mm-hmm. of those friendships had lasted more than 40 years. And so she writes about these women. I know, it's incredible. And Singled Out, she said these relationships were extraordinarily stable. So the message in this seems to me to be, yes, go look for a romantic partner. But if you want a stable force in your life, you know, don't minimize finding and maintaining friendship.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I have a friend that I've had for 32 years. And, you know, we don't talk every day, but I imagine one day we will, you know, but we really can't minimize the importance of friends, because not having friends may actually affect us on a cellular level and lead to a shorter lifespan. Even if you're an African gray parrot, a study published by some researchers out in Austria discovered that telomeres, which are these little bits of DNA at the end of chromosomes, whose job it is to control the stability of your DNA, are actually affected by whether or not a parrot was socially isolated. And, you know, normally as we get older, telomeres on their own naturally get shorter, which in the end results in more DNA damage and aging. But here's the crazy part. The parrot that is kept alone ages faster and has shorter telomeres than parrots that are in social partnerships, even if they're the same age. And, you know, in humans, we know that social integration is actually an important predictor of longevity. So it's not hard to imagine that having friends affects us at our DNA.
Wow, that is so interesting. And it brings me to the thinking on the evolutionary origins of friendship. And the thinking by evolutionary psychologists is that it came out of our survival needs. United we stand, divided we die of hunger or get eaten. And it's really interesting how much more complex that actually has become in both humans and animals.
Absolutely. And I think that it's clear from that, you know, friendship is adaptive in a lot of ways. I mean, we know that having strong social bonds reduces stress, lowers the risk of disease, and obviously increases your lifespan. And as I mentioned, may even affect our DNA. So, you know, social network analysis, which looks at how individuals are connected with one another, is actually showing us that all kinds of animals have buddies. And some individuals are super popular. I mean, it's basically Facebook for animals. And
do they play Farmville?
They don't, but, you know, wild horses, speaking of farms, wild horses, the social network analysis approach has shown us that females with more friends experienced less harassment by males, higher birth rates, and greater survival than compared to females that had fewer pals.
Well, okay, as a victim of mean girls growing up, what I want to know is, are there mean girls in the horse kingdom too?
Well, not so much in horses, but in Chacma baboons, look out. I mean, females are pretty aggressive. And with all the lunging, biting, and hair pulling that goes on, it really makes the girls from high school seem kind of cuddly by comparison.
That is scary. That's scary.
But, you know, for I want to talk about for a moment about how we choose our friends or if we choose them at all. You know, Amy, I know a few weeks ago you did a show with Joshua Wolfshank on the myth of the lone genius. And how pairing up with someone can actually enhance your creative energy and even your creative output. Do you think that that has anything to do with how we make friends with certain people?
Absolutely. And Joshua pointed out that sometimes these pairings that we have start with being in the same place as your friend to be. And this often relates to your interests. Or sometimes, like in romantic partnerships, there's matchmaking, actually. Somebody who realizes, hey, you are so much like this person and you like what they like and you two should meet. And so looking at my life, most of my friends are either writers or they're scientists, and most of them are politically incorrect and pretty irreverent. And so those areas, that sort of thinking, those are the context of my life. And so we have these deeply shared interests and we can help each other because of these. But what's interesting that Shank pointed out is sometimes these pairings that motivate people, there are people who don't really like each other a whole lot. And he gives the example of the late advice columnist Ann Landers and Dear Abby, who are actually sisters. They're twins, and he mentioned their rivalry fueled their careers and advice giving. It made them both better. And there's this competition between people who like each other, too.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny because animals, at least in terms of being friends with individuals that are similar to them, do the same kind of thing, you know, as we do. And what you were saying about how a lot of your friends are writers and scientists. Well, you know, in chimpanzees, individuals that are really outgoing tend to hang out with each other while the shy ones hang out with each other, too. They sort of separate based upon their personalities. But in some sense, you know, I think to talk about how we choose our friends or who we end up being friends with, we really need to think about what friendship is. And, you know, I think for me, I see friendship as this loving, supportive, and respectful and enjoyable relationship with another individual who always has my back. You know, when I think about the people that I call friends, that's what comes to mind for me.
Yeah, I really agree with you there. I thought at an earlier point in my life when I was still recovering from my loser childhood, I realized I had one friend, but that one friend is somebody I could call, or vice versa. You know, I could say, hey, David, you know, I'm in Alaska and I'm lost. Will you take four planes and hire some sled dogs? And he'd say, yeah. So right. I think that's really important. And so basically, I see friendship, I think it's like love without the sex. I call it actually having a crush on someone as a human being. You know, and it's really good when it's not just like your acquaintances. And I think right. that it's really, what's really important, these shared values, they're really important. That you have these shared values and interests. You don't have to share all your values, but the really important things, and that there's this sort of interpersonal chemistry, you know, something about the two that clicks. And you mentioned this, because this isn't just like, oh, here's how you have a friend, A plus B equals
right.
C. You have fun together. That's really important.
Well, yeah, and, you know, actually, now that you mention it, I've actually always joked with all of my best girlfriends that if only they were a guy, I would totally marry them in a heartbeat, you know. But sometimes, you know, I think we say that someone is a friend, we throw around the word friendship, but we don't really mean friendship at that level.
Yeah, I want to talk about how to choose friends when we talk about friendships at a high level. But first, you're listening to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Elkon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
Support our show and entertain yourself while improving your life by buying our new books.
I'm Amy Elkon, and I'm the author of Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Vertelin, and my book is Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships.
We'll be right back.
To choose your friends well, you have to know who you are. This is really important. So, you know, you start there, figure out who you are and what you care about, because this is really important. You have to know what you value. And this is something I get a lot of this. People write in for my advice column. They really don't know who they are. You know, and you can't make any decisions if you don't. So, and actually, Michelle Skeen, who was on my show a few months ago, had this great suggestion. She has a book. I forget the name. Sorry, Michelle. But it has all these words in it, like family, religion, atheism, you know, all these different things. What's important to you? And you look through those and pick those out and find the sort of the top 10 or something like that. That's not what she suggested. But you need to really figure out who you are, what you value, and then that helps you look for friends. You look for the people who care about the stuff that you find most important. Also, they have to be good people. This is really important. People don't do this in their relationships and don't do this in their friendships. They forget to look, is the person ethical? Because some taker is not going to be a friend who's going to be one who's good for you.
Well, right. And that would be like actually having a Kia, a really large parrot from New Zealand, as a friend, because they are all about the taking. In one study, to see if they could do some give and take, Kias failed miserably, and they did a lot of taking but not so much giving. So essentially, in that case, you know, a dominant individual basically made subordinate individuals do all the work and get none of the treats, and that's really no friend at all.
Well, wait, the parrot's doing this together. Parrots, so are all these parrots nasty and have no friends?
Well, so basically when they paired up two Kias, two of these parrots, one of them would act like the dominant one and basically make the subordinate one step on the lever that released all the treats and then would take all the treats and give none to the one who did all the work.
Wow. Is that because they're pretty?
Yeah.
They think they get away with it?
They horrible. Are actually really pretty, but they have this huge curved beak. It really is like a hook, and you know, maybe it's just sort of frightening. I don't know. But yeah, they are beautiful. Maybe that's why they think they don't need any friends.
Wow. Nasty mofos of the bird kingdom.
Yes.
Well,
but
this,
I think honey badgers actually take the cake for being like the nastiest in the animal kingdom. They have absolutely no friends.
Well, because I'm not you. I've only seen them on YouTube, so I didn't know they were really nasty, but no.
They are.
Now I do.
Yeah, they are.
Well, if you have those nasty friends, it's important to be honest about the kind of friend, you know, the level of friend you have. People don't want to do that. They feel ashamed that they have a bad friend, but that's the way you get rid of the bad friends, and we'll get to that later, but you know, there are different levels of friends, and people don't really think about this until they move away or leave a job. I don't want to say lose a job in this economy, but there's what's called proximity friends. And these are people, that's my name for it, people who you hang out with and you think you're friends, but it's really just because you work together or you live in the same neighborhood. And they're people that you need in a context, you know, in that context are very important. They pass gossip to you that you need so you can maybe get a raise. But they aren't really integral to your life. They aren't really these people who resonate with you. And so when you move away, you leave your job, they just disappear. You just don't see them again sometimes.
Right. Well, you know, I actually like the phrase you have there, proximity friends, because animals have different levels of friendship too. And they actually have what we actually call temporary proximity associations or friends. And we see that in something like Asian elephants. And so their proximity friendships are occurring not so much around a job, but as where the food is in any particular season, when it peaks in certain areas, they all end up kind of in the same place to do the same thing, which is access this food. And so you have these kind of proximity based friendships. But then we also see strategic friendships in animals, like in baboons and macaques. They make lots of these types of friends. And one of the important factors for those types of friendships in baboons and macaques has to do with how similar you are in age and social status. And that's because if a friend is going to have your back in a conflict, in the case of baboons or macaques, it's most likely going to be a high-ranking individual, because that's the only one who's going to take a chance to put themselves at risk, you know, to have your back. And this is also true in an animal like hyenas, where if you're trying to join a new social group, right? This is always hard when you move to a new area. How do you make friends? Well, it's always a good idea to make friends with someone who has lots of friends. And hyenas do this really well. So So basically, if you're a hyena that has no friends yet and you're looking to make one, the proper etiquette is to always side with the most popular hyena in any conflict.
God, this sounds like junior high.
I know, but it even is like in the corporate world, because, you know, as many of us already know, it's not what you know, but who you know. And this matters for hyenas just as much as it does for us.
Yeah, wow, that is really amazing. And really, that's really especially true out here in Los Angeles where I live. And there's a guy I talked to this week. He's such a talented guy, but he just doesn't know the right, you know, he's not slick, doesn't know the right manager to plug him in. And I predict he'll be that guy that you see on the Academy Awards, you know, who all of a sudden, you know, like five of his things go worldwide and huge and everything. It's just, it's so amazing. And so it's really important for people. They think that this is maybe too machinating, but it is important to cultivate friendships with people, and you're going to give them something. These aren't real friendships. These aren't those like warm and cuddly, I've got a crush on you as a human friendships, but they're sort of tit for tat friendships. But there's another kind of friendship that's kind of ugly. While we're on the ugly side of friendships, it's the frenemy. And I love this term. Jessica Mitford, the writer, came up with this in 1977. And this term frenemy describes people who are actually rivals or enemies of yours, but they're civil enough and need you enough to have a pretend friendship with you. So it's friendship out of need. Right. Yeah. And you need something from them. They need something from you. So, you know, you hand it over and you get something back. But it's not that lovey-dovey friendship. So I'm sure this happens in animals too.
Well, it does. And in fact, you know that phrase, keep your friends close and your enemies closer?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is like the chimpanzee rule, right? So they can have not for all of them, but for some of them, they can have and be frenemies. Basically, in chimpanzee society, status is so important. And because of that, you know, individuals that are trying to move up in the world, in the chimpanzee world, basically align themselves with whoever is most dominant. But because the hierarchy in chimpanzees is not as stable, and it's kind of in flux sometimes, some individuals will switch allegiance and support the opposition if they see that their current, quote, friend is losing his position, which sometimes means, I know.
Yeah, that's real.
I know.
That's cold. That is really cold.
It is cold.
You know, they did the Rousseauian vision, you know, just the noble savage and the animals, they're all licking each other. God, it's not that way.
No. And so what that means, right, is that sometimes a friend is not really a friend.
And, you know, that's really important to figure out in humans. And two evolutionary psychologists I know, Tubi and Cosmetis, they point out that there's a hard lesson that many of us learn that, you know, fair-weather friends can mimic true friends. I think we all know this. But so they say, the adaptive problem is how to differentiate those who are deeply engaged in your welfare from those who will disappear in your time of deep need. And so my suggestion for how to figure this out, I think that it's very important to engage in friendship testing. So what you do is you express need, and a lot of people aren't comfortable with that, but you really need to do that because they don't want to know. But express need and see if your friend will meet your need. And, you know, if you have low self-esteem, you're going to think, oh, I can't do that, you know. But actually, the thing I always say, the fact that you're afraid of something, of doing something, isn't reason to avoid doing it. In fact, you could say it's reason to do it.
Right. Well, and, you know, and actually, you know, I can tell you in terms of testing friendships, in those situations where, let's say there's a conflict happening and one chimpanzee will actually solicit help from his friend, and when he realizes that his friend switched sides, you can, you know, I mean, there's footage of this I've seen, and the look on his face is just like devastated. Like, he can't believe that, like, his friend was really not his friend and is actually supporting the one, you know. And I think, you know, for us sometimes figuring out who's really a friend isn't easy, and so this testing is, I agree with you. I think it's really important. And, you know, I wish sometimes that it was as straightforward as knowing whether an octopus is your pal.
Wait, you have to tell, octopus? Real? What do they do?
Well, so apparently, if an octopus isn't really your friend and doesn't like you, they let you know. They don't pretend. There's no pretending in octopus world. There's this story of Truman, a Pacific octopus that used to reside at the New England Aquarium, and he apparently took a very strong dislike to a particular female volunteer. And in case, you know, you're not sure what an octopus does when it actually likes you, it will turn white and its skin will be really smooth. But if it doesn't like you, well, its skin turns all red and pimply and it might glare at you. And then, of course, if it's given the opportunity, it'll top things off with basically spitting a stream of salt water at you. And I think, you know, if only, like, we could identify our enemies based on whether their face turned red and pimply, that would be really helpful.
I would like it if all the mean girls got zits. That would work for me. That would really work for me. Well, all that nasty stuff, I mean, basically, the octopus is peeing on you. I mean, that's just really, that's really horrible. I mean,
at least that would clear.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. Well, we're on all this nasty stuff. Let's talk about how to get rid of a friend. I give advice on this in my book, Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck. And it is super, super important. There are these times you realize your friendship has run its course, or the person you're just, you know, something's not working. And so people are tempted to disappear in a person, like they just erase themselves. And this is the most horrible thing you can do, you know, to just disappear. You know, and we are conflict avoidant. We hate these uncomfortable conversations. We'll put them off. But when you need to break up with a friend, you really need to tell them. But I will say this. I think face-to-face telling is humiliating because they can get too much information from you. People don't all agree with me on this. And you should really see what works for your friendship. But I think that the gently worded handwritten note is the best. But without too much information, you just have to give them the message, look, it's not working. And give them a kind and vague excuse. Things like, you know, we've grown apart. We're not clicking anymore. You know, the important message is that it's goodbye forever. So they don't have these false hopes and they don't just wonder what happened to you if you've been, you know, buried by drug lords in the desert or something horrible like that.
Right. Well, you know, I actually, you know, I've always had a hard time with ending friendships and really any kind of relationship. And I have to confess, I've ghosted, I've Caspered people. And, you know, this is where your advice and also, you know, animals really helped me, because for them, it's pretty simple. You know, if you turn your back on me, I turn my back on you. And this happens in sticklebacks. Like if your pal doesn't back you up when a predator is around, then you don't back them up the next time. And,
tell me, because I'm not a pro like you. What's a stickleback?
Oh, yeah.
Is it a gorilla or a fish?
Oh, sorry. No.
I was guessing. Gorilla or fish?
A stickleback fish.
Yes, okay, thank you.
They're fish. And, you know, but also like in many birds, if they're bickering, they just stop interacting. You know,
smart
so,
birds.
So they really have a simple, direct way of handling things. Well, you know, that's almost the end of our show.
This is too bad. I love doing these with you. And this is Amy Alcon. You've been listening to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Alcon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. Join the two of us again in 2 weeks and join Amy Alcon next week for her regular show featuring the top behavioral scientists explaining how their work can improve your life.
And hang in, there's a little more, but first I have to ask you, please support our work. Buy our new books. They're in paperback. They're not expensive. Amy Alcon's Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck, that's my book, and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin's Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships. Dr. Jen, great show tonight.
Yes, thanks.
Summer is officially here, and so are fresh summer favorites.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming, and I'm loud. Roar!
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything!